In tape 107, we dealt with the discovery and recovery of the books of Enoch. We want to get into more details now, the content, doctrinal parallels between the books of Enoch and the literature of the Latter-day Saint Church of Jesus Christ. It is difficult to pinpoint what actually sparked the renewed interest by scholars in the extra-canonical literature, that literature outside of the accepted canon. Conveniently, but wrongly, the scholars have divided such material into apocrypha and pseudepigrapha, especially since the publication of a great work in 1912 by Dr. Charles called the Apocrypha and Pseudepigrapha of the Old Testament. It may have been the discovery of the Qumran Scrolls in 1945 and 1948 and subsequently, or the discoveries of other manuscripts, or the need to restudy some of the extra-biblical books found there, such as Jubilees, Enoch, and Testament Levi, found in the scrolls of Qumran. Or it may have been the discovery of the Coptic Nag Hammadi Library and the need to relate all such material to already known texts. Or it may have been a general feeling that extra-biblical literature had not been adequately explored. This comes from the foreword to Third Enoch by John S. C. Grinfield. Scholars today realize that there's been a virtual avalanche of manuscripts and documents demanding the time of scholars and the skills of specialists in interpretation and translation. Great discoveries of Enoch, then described in tape 107, bring our attention to three main Enochian materials. First Enoch, which was found in 1773, which I have here, this black book, translated in 1821, and then further edited in 1883. And Second Enoch, which is a very large volume of material prepared by Dr. Charles. In fact, the Second Enoch material was found in Russia and in the Slovakian areas of Eastern Europe. It became available around 68 years ago. And then Third Enoch, which really was available in English translation, though discovered again in Europe during the end of the 19th century, called Three Enoch, the Hebrew Book of Enoch, 1863, but not available in English till 1928. And then the great discoveries of the Dead Sea Scrolls. This huge red book that's here on the pulpit deals with the books of Enoch, the Aramaic fragments of Qumran Cave number 4. After 27 years of suppression, the material became available a couple of years ago. I'm going to use Dr. Malik's material from the Dead Sea Scrolls, where a number of documents were found related to the books of Enoch, as the basis of the preliminary material of today's discussion. The fragments of leather scrolls belonging to the books of Enoch, which came from Cave 4 of Qumran, represented 11 documents. In the 3rd century A.D., one of these documents had been canonized by the Manichaeans. Mani, a so-called Jewish apostle, self-designated, born around 216 A.D., and killed nearly 50 years later. Among his materials were many references to Enoch. In fact, among the Manichaean period, Dr. Malik says, I have located about 10, if not some 12 of the manuscripts of this book among the Qumran fragments, published and unpublished. There will be a future tape on Mani and the discoveries in Turfan, China, Algeria, and Egypt of the Manichaean material. It's quite exciting. But Dr. Malik goes on and says that there were 5 Aramaic literary works among the Qumran scroll material, including the astronomical book, the Book of Watchers, the Book of Giants, the Book of Dreams, and the Epistle of Enoch. In some traditional material, there were at least 37 books of Enoch. And an evil Enoch, descendant of Cain, likewise tried to duplicate these 37 books as well. Well, there may have been more or less, but at least we've been able to recover, in terms of titles, a considerable number of these 37 so-called books. Dr. Malik says, an analysis of the Book of Watchers, found among the Dead Sea Scrolls, will allow us to distinguish the very archaic Enoch document, which was probably entitled The Visions of Enoch, which is sometimes described as Second Enoch. Then there was also the Book of Parables. Now, the Enoch literature had a full-blown renaissance in the early Christian communities, and yet, on whose authority has the Enoch material
Lot's position among the canon. There's 127 references to the Book of Enoch in the New Testament alone. Why aren't, then, Christian communities today using the Enoch material? That's difficult to answer. Joseph Smith in 1830, through inspiration and revelation, received fragments from the Book of Enoch, extracts from the Book of Enoch, as a bonus, contained now in chapter 6 through the balance of the Book of Moses and the Purgate Price. I will assume the Latter-day Saint participants in this presentation and who may hear this tape will be familiar with the contents of the Purgate Price in section 107, the Doctrine and Covenants, and general references to Enoch, so that they can see some of the parallels that we may refer to here as we pursue the study of the books of Enoch. Now, in one of the documents, it states that there is a detailed account how Abraham was the inventor of astronomy. He taught the Phoenicians the evolution of the sun and the moon and all other things. And in Egypt, he initiates the priests of Heliopolis in astronomy and in other sciences, revealing to them that the invention of these scientists goes back to Enoch. And it was he who was first to invent astronomy, not the Egyptians. Now, the Greeks claim that Atlas invented astronomy, but Atlas, in some of the identifying documents, is none other than Enoch. Enoch had a son, Methuselah. And note here in this ancient document Malik is quoting from, he learned all these things, these astronomical things, through the angels of God. In the Egyptian grammar book prepared by Joseph Smith, he points out that Methuselah possessed the Urim and Thummim and was one of the first to have a knowledge of where God dwelt and the great immensity and delirium of immensity in space. This is interesting confirmation of some of these not-so-well-known Mormon ideas and teachings of the prophet Joseph Smith. At any rate, there's a concise summary of astronomical knowledge in this astronomical book of Enoch, a treatise describing the path of the sun and the moon and other matters learned by means of angelic instruction and passed on to Methuselah, who himself possessed Urim and Thummim, and Abraham, a possessor also of the Urim and Thummim, as described in the Great Price, became a man intimately aware of astronomy. Just check chapter 3 and chapter 4 of the book of Abraham, and one can get an idea of the details of knowledge and understanding that Abraham possessed. Now, the function of Enoch in his role as sign of knowledge for all generations was to be formulated, as the author of a book of Jubilees found among the Dead Sea Scrolls enunciated, because he was sent down there. Enoch was sent to the earth as a sign that he might witness against all the children of men and foretell every work of the generations until the day of judgment. For the work of Enoch was created as a testimony for the generations of the world, in which he recounted to all generations their actions up to the day of judgment. Look in 107 section Doctrine and Covenants for such confirmational parallels. Dr. Malik says, I see in this reference to various astronomical and calendrical dates calculated on the cycle of 3, 6, 7, and 49 years, copies of which exist among the manuscripts of cave number 4 of Qumran. There was a great deal of astronomical material found at Qumran, which, as you'll see as we go along, will confirm some rather unique Mormon doctrine. For example, in the Purgate Price, we have references to such things as Kokabim and Kolob and presiding stars. Page 20 of Dr. Malik's book, he says, there's a clear reference to the last section of the astronomical book of Enoch, which lists many names of angels and presiding stars, seasons and days, continuing to the end of the book. There's an allusion to in Enoch 80, in the Epistle of Barnabas, and then also in Sincilius, on the role of the angel, Kokab El, star of God. Note Kokab. Where did Joseph Smith, if he was merely a conjurer of things, a fabricator of ideas, get this kind of astronomical information on the presiding stars and Kokab El? Look in the third chapter of Purgate Price. The astronomical book of Enoch was well known in Eastern and Western Christian areas. Enoch is standing with an unrolled scroll, and to the left of him, death is cowering and flinching from him. Open tombs in the lower left part of the miniature represent the resurrection, prefigured by Enoch's assumption to heaven, his translation. And in one of the descriptions, a drawing The upper left is occupied by 12 busts and the attributes of 12 months, and on the other upper right by busts of the sun and moon in the starry heavens. The first copy of number K4 Enoch material dates from the first half of the second century before Christ. It was therefore like the second copy of Enoch in the mid-second century brought to Qumran from elsewhere. It seems probably, says Dr. Malik, that these documents contained only the Book of Watchers, while others contained the other details of other documents copied in the scriptorium of Qumran in the course of the first century A.D., forming part of a great collection of Enoch material. We don't have all of the material of Enoch yet available. Dr. Malik, his attention was given to the Aramaic portions of the books of Enoch. In one of the books of Enoch, there's a dramatization of persons introduced into the action one after another according to the degree of their spiritual eminence and move on opposite sides of the poles of heaven and earth, of eternity and history. There's the daughters of men and the sons of heaven, and Semihaza and his companions who have existed since eternity, who came down from heaven to earth at a precise age and in a specific place. There's the clamor of men as they rise to gateways of heaven and to the ears of the four archangels who dwell in the celestial sanctuary, and the archangels who consult other angels and plead the cause of men to the Lord of Lords, Master of Eternity, and the Most High. The Most High orders four missions to earth for Enoch, and he assigns four archangels also to these missions, and delivers a discourse in which the decree of the punishment of the fallen angels is contrasted with the promise of great peace and justice for the children of men who are righteous. Now, in two of the missions by Enoch, they're carried out in a sort of a horizontal sense, in contrast with the descent from paradise and the ascent to the celestial palace of the first two missions. Enoch descended into the area of hell and also into the celestial palaces, into the various spheres and worlds, and provides insight into pre-existence, the spirit world, the post-mortal world, found only in Mormon doctrine. In another one of the documents on Enoch, the Book of Watchers, it's interesting to note that paradise is situated exactly in the northeast of the universe. There was a geography of the universe. And this is interesting from the understanding of scientists today and astronomers. What's the nature and character of our universe? Latter-day Saints would be encouraged to exceed the available material in literature and realize that if there are degrees of glory in a kingdom of no glory, countless eternities, an immensity of space, then our present understanding of the geography of the universe is very infantile and initiatory in degree. He noticed also, Enoch does in the Book of Watchers, that in the northeast part of the universe where paradise is located, there is the tree of knowledge. Enoch first crosses the river of fire and then great rivers and continues on to a place of darkness where no being of flesh may go. In his translated condition or his prepared condition, Enoch was able to traverse the immensity of space and understand its geography. The belief that paradise is situated in the north or northwest is given practical visual expression in the orientation of Qumran tombs at the ruins of Qumran, says Dr. Malik. The bodies are stretched out south and north with the head on the southern side, so when brought to life, the just elect will be facing the paradise abode of God. There's also a book of dreams, and in one of those, there's a statement that says, "So here we are in the paradise of precious mountains, which constitutes the third and highest celestial sphere." The three degrees of glory, the highest being the celestial sphere, is enunciated by Enoch. In a second dream, there's a tableau of world history from the creation of the first man to the eschatological advent of the kingdom of God. Individuals and peoples appear in this in the guise of various animals, while the angels are transformed into men dressed in white. Whoever taught that there were angels and they were men? The first book of Enoch, or the Ethiopic Book of Enoch is now represented by nearly three dozen manuscripts. The very first scientific edition of the Ethiopian material, following the first translation of a document brought back from Ethiopia by James Bruce in 1773, was by a Mr. A. Dillman in 1851. At that time, five manuscripts had been assembled. And, of course, it wasn't until 1893 that Charles added 10 more. And then, soon after that, the number had risen to 27. And then in 1912, 29. And now, today, just a year or two ago, the Ethiopic Book of Enoch, with a great deal of other cataloged fragments of Enoch material from around the world, has been assembled in this particular book, a new edition in the light of the Aramaic Dead Sea Fragments by M.A. Nibb. Those who want to be aware of the various books of Enoch would want to avail themselves of that two-volume set of material. We'll be emphasizing today the Ethiopic Book of Enoch, the material of 2nd Enoch and 3rd Enoch, and the Aramaic material from the Dead Sea Scrolls. In addition to those four great bodies of material, there are others enumerated in the 3rd Book of Enoch, the Hebrew Book of Enoch, that we mentioned that Mr. Grenfield had provided a foreword to earlier. In one of these Ethiopic books of material, and in the 2nd Book of Enoch, there are visions of Enoch and Noah. The 2nd Book of Sibyllines, composed essentially by Christian authors, says Dr. Malik, describes the resurrection of souls and bodies and judgment by the great immortal God. The universal resurrection of souls and bodies and the judgment by the elect one was affirmed. The nature and character of the preexistence and the nature and character of spirits is described in tape 107 on the Book of Enoch, and we need not repeat it here. A very interesting statement and passage in which Mormons will find very subtle confirmation of Mormon doctrine is given on page 124 of Malik's study. He says, in the doctrines of the various sects, the person of Enoch plays an important role, either negative or positive. Now, this is rather interesting. In the Prayer of Great Price and elsewhere, and in the Mormon doctrines and interpretation of the Old Testament, which does vary a great deal from the Christian world as a whole, there was a son born to Cain known as Enoch, the evil Enoch. And then there was a descendant of Adam who became Enoch, of which the Old Testament is referred to, and who was the body that was translated in the Old Testament. In one of the documents, this is given. Enoch asked the Lord, and I asked the Lord and said, what shall be in that time? And the Lord said to me, from the time when the devil fell from the glory of the Father and lost his own glory, he sat upon the cloud and sent his ministers, even angels flaming with fire unto men from Adam, even unto Enoch his servant. In the 76th section of the Doctrine and Covenants, 107th and elsewhere, we have information concerning the background of the adversary, where it was taught that he fell from glory, particularly in the 76th section of the Doctrine and Covenants, and lost his own glory. Where does it say that the adversary, the devil, sent his ministers to Adam? The document continues. The adversary, the evil one, raised up the evil Enoch upon the firmament and showed him his godhead and commanded pen and ink to be given him. And he sat down and wrote 67 books. This would indicate that we may have 67 books available on Enoch because he tried to imitate the righteous order. And he commanded that he should take them to earth and deliver them unto his sons. And Enoch, the unrighteous Enoch, let his books down upon the earth and delivered them unto his sons and began to teach them to perform the custom of sacrifice and unrighteous ordinances. And so did he, the evil Enoch, hide the kingdom of heaven from men. This is a rather exciting material as we examine it from the standpoint of unique Mormon doctrine. The covenant made with Cain and the adversary, which followed him in several successive generations, the imitation of the righteous order of things found in the secret book of John, mentioned in tape 106. And in the Book of Helaman and the Book of Mormon, about the access to books which dealt with the custom of sacrifice, particularly human and unrighteous ordinances, which had been time and time again attempts made to keep from the eyes of men, but which kept on reappearing again and again in generations, perpetuating evil continuously. In another document, in 3rd Hebrew, or the 3rd Book of Enoch, just a list of the contents might be of interest. There's an introduction, and then there's a treatment of Enoch, meeting with Metatron, and fragments dealing with the ascension of Moses, the translation of Moses. There's a section on angels, and where systems and hierarchy of angels are distinguished. A section on judgments, and then on the celestial heavens. There's a section on divine chariot and on the heavenly regions. And then Enoch is shown the secrets of the heavens. And the particular person who's the subject of Third Enoch is likewise given this great opportunity to traverse the heavens. Here he sees the throne representing all the events of past, present, and future, constellations and planets. And then, interestingly, the spirits of the unborn children. Here Enoch sees in the preexistence those who've not yet received a body earthly, where they are prepared. They have bodily shape as a man and as a female. And then he sees the spirit world, those who've departed this sphere, the area of the deceased, and also the spirits of the souls of the punished angels. Then there's a section on divine names, and a shorter section dealing with the confrontation of Enoch again with Metatron, and then the transmission of secrets to Moses, the protest of angels, and the chain of traditions. Just that outline can give Latter-day Saints quite a bit of stimulation in terms of unique parallels of their own understanding. It's in some of the Qumran material, and likewise in some of the Enoch number 1 material, that we have information concerning Raphael. In the name of the holy heavens, and in the name of Metatron, the great prince of the whole world, and in the name of Raphael, the prince of all healings. We've discussed Raphael, and that he was in charge of the wounds and sickness of men in tape 91. And we find some of the background for that information and justification in the Aramaic discoveries of Qumran. In one of the Dead Sea Scrolls fragments, it says, "And to Raphael, the Lord said, do go, Raphael, and bind Azazel hand and foot, and cast him into darkness." Raphael was given the power to bind up the adversary, and was an instrument, therefore, if used properly, to help and aid in the upbringing of young people. I've outlined that in tape number 91, my own personal understanding of the role of Raphael, at least. Now, that little bit of background from the Aramaic material from Qumran then kind of sets the stage for comparing some of the Book of Enoch material with additional Mormon doctrine. I'm going to go to 3rd Enoch and 2nd Enoch and just give you some parallels in both of those. Read them, and if you find anything significant and similar to Mormon doctrine, well and good. If there isn't anything similar in your minds with what I might quote here, with anything you understand about Mormon doctrine, then that's fine as well. But I believe that the publication of all of the materials of Enoch will open up a door to a renewed examination of the Latter-day Saint doctrines and its claim to be a restoration. And then in going into the Enoch material, as 3rd Enoch, the book of 3rd Enoch will suggest, you'll then become involved with the Mandean material, of which a tape has been prepared as well, and the Manichaean, a future tape in the future that we'll be preparing. In reference to the Aramaic material and Azazel, there is a reference here in 3rd Enoch that Azazel is a fallen angel and involved in the evil agencies. The protection against the adversary is found in the 5th of the 10 Commandments. Honor thy parents, and all will be well with you, says Paul. In the 9th section of Doctrine and Covenants, if you obey the word of wisdom, and then the destroyer will pass you by. Parallels in 1st Enoch And third, Enoch includes such things as that the fallen angels lead men astray by teaching them secrets, magic and sorceries, and worthless ordinances. I think that's quite acceptable to nearly anybody. There's a parallel to Malachi 3. I will open the store chambers of blessings which are in the heavens, so as to send them down upon the earth. Here's a reference where it states, "Where have ye left the high, holy, and eternal heaven? Wherefore have you left the high and holy eternal heaven? Why hast thou left the highest of the high heavens?" These are parallels both in 1st and 3rd Enoch. And they refer to the three chambers, corresponding to the three divisions of men. Men are divided into the righteous, the wicked who have not met with retribution in this life, and the wicked who have. And the spirits of the souls of the dead, and all the souls of the children of men, are ruled over by angels set with delegated responsibility. In 3rd Enoch it says the angels are possessors of parts of the secrets only. They bring the fragrance to the righteous and godly who shall inherit the Eden and the tree of life. In 1st Enoch it says, "I saw how the stars of heaven came forth. I counted the portals out of which they proceed and wrote down all their outlets of each individual star by itself according to their number and their names." There's a great deal of astronomical material in Enoch, some of it rather exciting, as we'll find as we go along. For example, the conscious existence of the sun, moon, and stars is noted in 1st Enoch. It's also found in the Mesoamerican material in the book Burning Water by Loretta Sojourney, page 134, and in Moses 7 in the Enoch material of the Pergrate Price. Enoch says, "I saw the stars of heaven, and I saw how he called them all by their names, and they hearkened unto him." The LDS do believe that there is conscious intelligence in all substance in the universe. In 1st Enoch, it talks about the preexistence of the Son of Man and the spirits of the elemental forces, and how the righteous and the elect shall have been clothed with garments of glory, and they shall be the garments of life from the Lord of Spirits, and how no evil could get power over men until they had learnt the secrets and sorceries from the fallen angels, and through the practice of these had been led astray into idolatry and other evil ways. Enoch, confirming the 77th section of the Doctrine and Covenants, the 130th, says, "He translated my spirit into the heaven of heavens, and I saw there as it were a structure built of crystals." Parallel to the Urim and Thummim, in 3rd Enoch, "I took him, Enoch, from among them." In terms of his translation, the records that were kept by Enoch are rather interesting. One reference in 1st Enoch says, "The heavenly tablets and the book of all the deeds of mankind." The heavenly tables record all the deeds of men to their remotest generation. Who teaches that there are records being kept? Silent note taken. In 3rd Enoch, we find that the three sources of knowledge of celestial beings and secrets include such things as, one, visions, which is the main part of the book of Enoch in this instance, two, words of an angel, and three, the great books. There's also the transport into the heavens, confrontation with deity and angelic beings. In terms of the records being kept, 1st Enoch 98 says, "Every sin is every day recorded in heaven in the presence of the Most High. In heaven the angels remember you for good before the glory of the Great One." In some of the pseudo-bigger material, the Apocalypse of Adam, again, references made to how we will be judged by the books that are kept in the heavens. "Out of the book shall you be judged." There's even a New Testament reference along that line. In terms of angelology in the books of Enoch, the lower order of archangels, who are the rulers of the world, are appointed over the stars and the government of the earth, and rulers over the lower order of angels, having control especially over the chanting and singing. The angels of elemental forces and the angels ruling over seasons and year identified and named. There's angels of the third heaven and angel guardians of paradise. an angel guardian to the place of torment, and the angels of punishment. The 132nd section of Doctrine and Covenants says, then the angels and gods are set there to do certain things. 30 Enoch says there's angels of destruction appointed over the punishment of the wicked in hell as well. In another one of the sources of 2nd Enoch, there's a reference to Enoch, that his translation is to be temporary. He is to return to earth again. He will be glorified. In 3rd Enoch, it says, and Enoch's elevation will then be final. And when he descends into terrestrial regions, he does so as a celestial being. The Mormon doctrine teaches that he is, at the present time, a translated being, and that he will become celestial. He will return to the earth as a celestial being. That his present mission and activity is as a translated being, but of a celestial order. 2nd Enoch carries this a little further. His return is for a short time only. He is no longer of a terrestrial nature. He is transformed into a celestial being in rank on a level with the archangels, and he is made into an angel of the presence. He has an earthly robe which is changed into garments of God's glory. He is anointed with the Lord's holy oil, and Enoch is specifically a knower of secrets. In 3rd Enoch, it says Enoch is transformed into a celestial being, and his flesh is changed into fire. He is clad in garments of glory. He is made into a ruler over the highest angels. Mormons will see many parallels there. Enoch writes down the secrets revealed to him in the books of his own, and the contents he reveals to men. This is found in 2nd Enoch. Obeying divine commands, Enoch reveals the books to his sons. One of his sons was Methuselah, and a grandson was Noah, and to the men of his generation, in order that they may hand them over to the next generation, and so on, that they might be handed down through all generations. No one born on the earth can hide himself, nor can his deeds be concealed. This is a special note in 2nd Enoch. It is particularly incumbent upon each generation or each group of men to whom the books of Enoch have been handed down, that they in turn communicate them. This is to continue till the end time. In the absence of having books available for our generation and to hand them down in 1830, Joseph Smith had restored to him by revelation the contents and extracts of portions of the Book of Enoch. What an exciting thing. Now, there have been many books, says 2nd Enoch, from the beginning of creation and shall be to the end of the world, and none shall make these things known to you like my writings. If you read the contents of the Book of Enoch found in the Pearl Great Price, you'll be astonished at the uniqueness of doctrines found there concerning the Christ and atonement and other aspects of eternity not found elsewhere, except now as we find them in recovered copies of the books of Enoch. In 3rd Enoch, we find that Enoch and Metatron possess all the secrets of the universe and reveals some of them to men worthy to receive them, as Moses. And here's what you find in the book of Moses. And that it is the duty of the men of faith who have received the secrets from earlier generations in their turn to communicate them to those worthy of them. And this is the obligation of the Latter-day Saint today, to convey the messages so tremendously revealed in the serenity found in the doctrines of Enoch in the Pearl Gate Price and elsewhere. The giver of light comes to give his brightness to the whole world, says 3rd Enoch. Now, divine judgments found in the books of Enoch. For example, in 2nd Enoch, it talks about the rebellion of the angels. There's a special study that's going on right now. Since the recovery of the books of Enoch, out of Ethiopia, out of Hungary and Russia, the Ukraine, and out of the other areas of Egypt, the Dead Sea Scrolls, and so forth, we now have a whole corpus of Enoch material being studied by individuals. A special conference was held last year in Europe. A number of symposiums will be held this year, which will be involving heavily the material of Enoch. One such study dealt with the rebellion in heaven, the knowledge of the rebellion in heaven, and the nature and character of the rebelling angels found in the books of Enoch now recovered parallel Mormon doctrines along the same line. The preliminary judgment of men is a daily judgment, says 2 Enoch. Decisions as to men's fate are given after his death. As long as he's alive, he has a chance to change some of those things. The angels are set over all the souls of men who write down all their works and their lives before the face of the Lord. And accusers of men are mentioned. We find the adversary may be one of the chief accusers. The righteous are just who are kept in paradise in the third heaven until the final judgment, after which they are to be gathered together for their life in the new age. This world having perished, their dwelling place will then be a new paradise, the great paradise. To the former, the place of torture situated in the third heaven is an eternal inheritance in terms of the wicked. For the wicked, from the first judgment and the final judgment, there will be no change in the fate of the wicked. As to the latter, the wicked are punished in a place situated below the heavens. Their punishment begins immediately after death, but they await the final decision as to their punishment to be given at the final judgment. Says 3 Enoch, the judgment is based on records of man's deeds and all events in the whole universe. The divine decrees are recorded, so man is judged not on his mortal existence, but all in which he was involved in all the vastness of eternity. And so the final judgment is of a greater scope than perhaps realized. Enoch speaks of the three classes of men in 3 Enoch. The righteous, their spirits have their abode in the presence of the throne of glory. In the time to come, the righteous shall inherit the Garden of Eden. And then the perfectly wicked is another class who are to be punished. And then the intermediate, who have to go through a sort of purgatory until they are cleansed from their sins. After being purified, they are probably accounted as righteous. And the middle group, the intermediary, are the larger majority of man. Not perfectly righteous, but neither wholly wicked. The parallel to the 76th, 84th, and 88th section of Doctrine and Covenants will be apparent there. In one of the studies on the third book of Enoch, the author tries to interpret the meaning of the word metetron. His conclusion, he is a celestial being who occupies the throne next to the throne of glory. And the throne next to the throne of glory, this occupant, this individual, is a mediator. Other aspects of this same person is identified in such a manner, we can come to the conclusion that at least in certain portions of the documents, Christ is represented. Those of you who might be interested in quasi-physical aspects of the books of Enoch or their scientific aspects might want to refer to the portion found in the third book of Enoch and described on page 171 that has interesting implications from a chemical standpoint. For example, we're dealing here with letters graven with flaming style on the throne of glory, and what is called the Kepar represents the highest part of the divine manifestation. It has to do with elements which are involved in the creation of the universe. These letters are the first essences, says this author, elements from or by which the whole of the manifested world was created. Not only the earth, planets, constellations, the seven heavens and their contents, but also the throne of glory itself. And they're in a form, a sort of manifestation of God himself. In other words, he uses them for what he accomplishes. The letters have the numbers inherent in them. They are, from one point of view, actually a sort of spiritual atom, says this translator. Enoch understood these elements to be spiritual atoms. These are combined in order to prepare and provide the so-called divine names. These are contemplated as the second step in the creative emanation, or as the secondary creative agencies. Whereas the word create or creation is always used, what is really is intended is emanation. These elements then are combined as part of a creative activity in which God is involved and to manifest himself. Now, this is interesting. The number of the principle is 70. This first group, the symbol, are 70 in number. Then there's a second group of 22, making in all 92 first elements or cosmical principles. Among these, Aleph, or number one, is regarded a special significance. It is the starting point in all of the elements for the whole process of emanation or creative activity. The basic number one element of the 92 is this hydrogen, of which the basic components of the universe as we know it today is essentially composed. It should be added that in the various Semoph, or the first 70, the first letter is thought to represent the dominant atom. In other words, the number one of the first 70 is the dominant atom. Hence, as this translator, it is regarded as the dominant element, which is often expressed as follows. Understanding was created by it. In consequence, a combination of Semar, the 70, may be expressed by the first letters of each. And it goes on. At any rate, it seems rather significant that here in ancient material, some pre-Christian in origin and source, an outline of essentially the chemical elements and understanding had been had by Enoch. And we find in the Perfect Price and Mormon doctrine that an understanding of creation and its activities and God's utilization of matter is fairly well represented. Here's another thing now found in the third book of Enoch. This has to do with the throne. It's a particular throne, and it's veiled off from the outer parts. There's a particular aspect of this called the pargo, on which are continually to be seen as a living picture the drama of all generations, their doings and their thoughts in past, present, and future times, and behind which are the last secrets of the Godhead, symbolically especially the reasons of divine decrees. Isn't that interesting that there's sort of a super huge panorama device where one can go in and see past, present, and future that's all the time there available, continually to be seen? Rather exciting. Has some implications there, doesn't it? There's also the treasures and storehouses and the sustaining forces of the universe and the treasures of spiritual maintenance and the treasures of elemental forces. In these are also contained the vehicles for the appearances of deity, that which conveys them to different parts of the universe. There's implications there that can be explored. We're not going to exhaust the books of Enoch at all. I'm just trying to suggest to you there's material in here that needs to be examined from the standpoint of both Mormon and other sources, that in not examining the books of Enoch, we may be depriving ourselves of tremendous mind-stimulating suggestions and ideas. Now, a few more comments where the third Enoch is concerned. The divine judgment dealt with in earlier chapters we just quoted from is concerned with the whole world, with all the nations of the world, and then with the individual, and then the angelic world. All are involved. Among some of the books found in and involved in the third Enoch material are the books of the living and the books of the dead, the book of records, the books of judgment, the book in which are recorded all the doings of the world, the books of fire and flame, and the books of records, again, a little different type. Records, then, attesting to the fact that an Enoch tradition has persisted from time immemorial down to our own day and recrowned with the great revelations given the prophet Joseph Smith, now confirmed in many aspects, even in odd names and details, is a rather exciting thing for the Latter-day Saint to be aware of. Now let's go to another source book. This has to do with first and second Enoch material, the Ethiopic Enoch and the second Enoch material, dealing with deity, his justice and mercy. We'll pursue this as long as time might permit, and we may never totally exhaust it in this particular tape, but we want to give you an idea of what might be provided. The excitement of reading in the scriptures today, like the 107 section of Doctrine and Covenants, and finding out that there is a book of Enoch to be testified of in due time, and that Joseph Smith had extracts from it in 1830, and that most of the book of Enoch material was not found until after 1851, 1863, and then in the Achaemenid of Egypt and elsewhere. Just to give you an example, there were three manuscripts of the Ethiopic material found as early as 1773, but not available until 1821. We have no knowledge that Joseph Smith had available to him that 1821 document. It was circulated in Europe. But even if he had, he couldn't have copied all that we now find in the Mormon doctrines concerning Enoch. That would have waited the discovery and translation of the Aramaic material of the Dead Sea Scrolls. in our own last past decade. Then there was the Achaemenid discovery in Egypt, which included the first 32 chapters of the work of Enoch, and was therefore a very welcome event. And to this has more recently been added then another discovery called the Chester Beatty discovery in 1931. It begins with a vision of Enoch in which he speaks of the judgment to come. It is from this utterance that the quotation in Jude in the New Testament is taken. So we're also finding those documents then were utilized by the New Testament authors. In one particular recovered manuscript, this part comes from a narrative of the rebellion of the angels and their commerce with women on earth and their condemnation in spite of their appeal to Enoch to intercede for them. For example, in a summary prepared by Dr. Kenyon, Enoch is conducted on journeys through the underworld and to distant parts of the earth, which conclude his first vision and mission. His second vision contains three parables, the first on the coming judgment of the wicked and reward of the righteous, with a vision of the heavens and their astronomical secrets. The second vision concerning those who deny the name of the dwelling of the Holy Ones and the Lord of Spirits, with a vision of the Son of Man, a Christ figure, and the triumph of the righteous over the wicked, and also the resurrection of the dead, of the seven mountains of metal and of the valley of punishment of the wicked, and the third of the blessedness of the saints. Much of this book rises to a high level of poetry, says this translator. Then comes a fragment of the book of Noah, in which Enoch foretells the deluge and is translated to heaven. After this comes a section on the sun and the moon and the stars, to which it may be observed that the author adopts the solar year favored by the Sadducees. An interesting parallel there. And, of course, we've already mentioned the references to the presiding stars in Kokobim, Kokobel, such tremendous parallels to the Purgatory Prize. Next follows a series of dream visions addressed to his son, Methuselah, containing a survey of the history of the world from the fall of the angels, so that this world's history does not begin with its creation, geological or otherwise. The history of this world begins in celestial spheres prior to the origin of this world, dealing with the fallen angels who were sent here, placed here on the earth, and through the deluge, the Exodus, the kingdom of Israel and Judah, the captivity, the Greek-Syrian period, the Maccabean revolt, and deals with the New Jerusalem and the coming of the Lamb, which is now today and nearly upon us, over whom the Lord of the sheep rejoiced. And the final section is the book written by Enoch for all my children who shall dwell on the earth, a series of admonitions to the righteous, prophecies of woes to sinners, ending with another fragment of the book of Noah describing the birth of a strange son, Telemach, and Enoch's foretelling that he shall be called Noah and shall be preserved from the destruction that is coming on the earth. A Mormon student of doctrine will see the parallels there. Now back again to some first and second Enoch parallels where doctrines concerning God are concerned. We will not finish this material in this particular tape, but we'll give you an indication of its content and then prepare another tape or even more in the future. The greatest of God and the greatness of God described by his titles, which he uses. In Ethiopic Enoch, we have the Lord of Lords, the God of Gods, the King of Kings, the Holy and Great One, the Lord of Glory and the Eternal King, the Honored and Glorious One, the Most High, who liveth forever. His power is described in a prophecy of the dread convulsion of nature. He is the Omniscient. All things are naked and open in thy sight, and thou seest all things, and nothing can hide itself from thee, says the Ethiopian Enoch. Thou knowest all things before they come to pass. The language is of an anthropomorphic character and is freely used. It is said, God will come forth from his dwelling, and going from thence he will tread on Mount Sinai and appear with his hosts, and will sit on a high mountain. He dwells in the wonderful house in the heavens. He speaks to Enoch with his own mouth. In fact, the dwelling has floors and ceilings of fire or light. His raiment shines more brightly than the sun, and it is whiter than any snow. Notice the parallels to Mormon doctrine again in the appearance of the Father and the Son to the prophet Joseph Smith and the angel Moroni. In fact, in some of these areas, it deals with the essence of light so bright. God also intervenes in the affairs of earth and uses angels as his agents. Again, there's references to the Lord, King of both great and mighty, Lord of the whole creation of the heavens. The angel scribe is ordered to write down all the transgressions of Israel's shepherd, and God says, then read out before me by number how many. Thou knowest and seest and hearest everything. There is nothing which is hidden from thee. Thou seest everything. God is described as descending from heaven to act on Israel's behalf. The Lord of the sheep descended at the voice of the sheep from a lofty abode and came to them. He went with them as their leader. His face was dazzling and glorious and terrible. And after that I saw the Lord of the sheep standing before them, and his appearance was great and terrible and majestic, and all of those sheep saw him and were afraid before his face. Says Enoch, he sees the Lord of the sheep bringing a new house, and he himself is within. Thou hast created and rulest all things. There's implications also in terms of the bringing Joseph's 11 brothers to Egypt. He intervened at the Exodus. He called Moses to be their leader. He raised up Saul and David. He sent prophets. He delivered Elijah. He at last handed over Israel to Gentile oppressors. They now recovered from that. Evidently, the writer of ancient Enoch had a strong faith in the controlling hand of God in the fortunes of Israel. Moreover, while God is described as using angelic ambassadors, he is also said to have spoken to Moses himself. Enoch also prays directly to God, and this is the privilege of every believer. All the heavens, he says, are thy throne forever. As a believer in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, I found it very exciting, very rewarding to study the books of Enoch and to become aware of their contents and the tremendous parallels to subtle and very deep Mormon doctrine. Now, my witness, of course, is that I know the Church of Jesus Christ to be absolutely true, and these things of Enoch are only sort of nice to know. As a believer, as Enoch would admonish, pray unto God and get your own testimony, and then keep it in the name of Jesus Christ. Amen.